papermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting...
The Media Project is underway, an opportunity for a half hour of commentary and analysis, and some days when we're really on our game, some insight into the great media issues of the week. So we're happy to have you with us. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union. Over on the other end of the table there is Dr. Alan Chartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio, and our host here today.
Well, I may be the host, but you're the boss.
Well, yes, of course. Let's just keep that in mind, sir. Now, next to him is Barbara Lombardo, the longtime editor of the Saratogian, now teaching at the University of Albany. How you
Delighted
doing?
Delighted to be here between the host and the boss.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There you go. You're going to be in a crossfire here. And Judy Patrick, for many years editor of the Daily Gazette in Schenectady, now vice president of the New York Press Association.
And also glad to be here in the crossfire.
Yeah, yeah. The New York Press Association. It sounds like a vaunted position. Is
Every role in the press is a vaunted
position. There you go.
Position. We're all important. Don't forget
Good
that.
Answer.
A wonderful notion. We do invite people to write to us, media@wamc.org. And Sue did. Sue doesn't say where she's from, but she was listening to our Monday afternoon airing on WAMC. And then after that, heard a puff piece, she says, on All Things Considered, the WAMC program. About diet information online, and featured one that currently ubiquitous company Noom, N-O-O-M. They did mention in the article that they receive support from Noom, but I don't recall a more blatant rah-rah ain't our sponsor great bit of garbage on NPR before, Sue says. I've lost some faith in them over the last few years, and this just makes it worse.
Well, Rexy, I'm so glad you made the distinction, because first you made a mistake and you said you heard it on WAMC, but, you know, people have to remember that there's something called NPR, that's the, you know, national news and stuff, and that's where you heard it. Or she heard it, as opposed to on WAMC, where we try to do a little bit better.
So I actually heard this piece, and I admit that at the beginning, it did sound like a puff piece for this new app, which is a new way of for people who want to lose weight. Now, after a few minutes, they rounded the piece out by talking about the business of losing weight and how Weight Watchers and Nutrisystem and Jenny Craig were all trying to change to keep up with the times where young people do not want to go to brick and mortar stores and do a weigh-in like Weight Watchers used to do. But certainly at the beginning it was, but that's kind of the problem we all face when we do features on a product.
Yes. Last week, as people are hearing this, Jane Golub died. The name Golub is big in New York's capital region, the owners of Price Chopper supermarkets, now Market 32. And, you know, we did the Gazette, the Times Union did stories about Jane Golub. And of course, the supermarket chain is a big advertiser. And so we immediately heard from people who said, well, a very nice piece to curry favor with your advertiser.
Well, Rex, have you ever seen a situation with that particular advertiser where they have withdrawn their advertising for any particular period because they were unhappy with something that happened either on the TV or in the paper? I asked a direct question, sir, and I demand a direct answer.
I can tell you for my part, I never saw that when I was at the Gazette.
I never have had that. You know, I've mentioned here before, we had an automobile dealer who withdrew all of his advertising after some reporting. He was one of these huge dealers who took out all of his ads from the paper, if you get my drift.
But it is interesting that you mention that, because I do know that every Thanksgiving, Neil Golub, Jane's husband, volunteers at the various television stations to teach everybody how to carve a turkey properly.
Yeah, and we featured that on TimesUnion.com, too. It's a great way to... It's really... Actually, I watched it about 15 years ago when I was trying to learn how to carve a turkey better. Yeah, it's very effective.
Well, one wonders, however, whether or not, you know, anybody would dare to say no when that volunteering happens. Do you see my point?
Right. Same way that, of course, people would say that underwriters, major underwriters of WAMC control whatever you say here.
And that's why we have to be very, very careful at every moment never to let that happen. And I think we do a pretty good job of it here.
Uh-huh. But you're saying we don't think we do a good job
now,
of it somehow.
Rex,
you're just sort
did
of...
I say that?
Well, you seem to be implying that.
Did I say that? Now, only a guilty conscience would prompt that.
I saw the coverage that both of those papers had about Jane Golub, and I thought that it was well-deserved. She has been well-known for decades as a very generous philanthropist in this area and a person who had a high profile. So it would be a mistake for the newspapers to not cover her and write about her and about her life.
But I recognize
there is that line, and I think we might have discussed this in the past, the Saratogian, when I was the editor, had a major advertiser for the local market pull his advertisements from the newspaper because he didn't want something that concerned him printed in the paper.
Yeah.
And Monty Trammer, the publisher at the time, said to
his threat. One of my favorite people in the world, yeah.
I can understand why. Said to his threat, well, I guess you're going to have to pull your advertising because we're not going to cow to that.
And did they ever come back?
They came back 12 years later after Monty left the paper.
Ouch. 12 years is a long time. We have never gotten back the auto advertiser I mentioned.
You seem to be doing all right, though.
My publisher, George Hurst, I've said this before in this program, is George is a remarkable man and never even mentioned to me that these ads had been pulled. It wasn't until 3 or 4 weeks later when the ad account rep was whining to me that I learned that the money had gone away.
We have nothing if we don't have our credibility.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And our news columns and airtime cannot be sold. They cannot be for sale.
Well, to put Alan on the spot, has any underwriter ever done this to you?
Yes, actually, we have had somebody pull out. I wish I could remember exactly who it was because they didn't like a story that was on. And of course, George Hurst is right. Rex is right. Bye-bye.
You know, the more difficult and the more provocative question really is, do you edit yourself out of concern for what may happen? Do you not so much, I don't think, advertisers, although that's a factor, though advertising is increasingly less value to us than reader relationships, because as time goes forward, as brick and mortar stores disappear and as advertisers, digital advertising
also
migrates
disappear.
To those big time, digital is virtually all taken by Google, Facebook, and other major online sources. So that makes the relationship with the readers all the more important. That's where revenue's got to come from in the future, which is why that credibility issue has got to be there.
That's very interesting that you say that, Rex, and as always, I respect everything that you say. However, this is fascinating to me because here at WAMC, I don't want to start beating my breast or telling you how great we are.
No, of course
but
not.
But we have an awful lot of underwriting now.
Yeah.
And we're gaining underwriting. People know it's a good way of getting the word out.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I think newspapers, I don't want to single any specific newspaper out, don't. They're losing advertisers now proportionally. And so I'm wondering whether or not that puts more pressure on them to succumb.
Succumb.
Yeah. In other words, do what we, as people who are listening to this program, think we should be doing, which is adhering to our journalistic principles.
Well, if you notice any evidence of it, let me know, because we publish a paper every day and we're online constantly and we take comments from readers. And if you ever see any indication that we're sucking up to advertisers or to politicians, as a matter of fact, if you ever think that we are doing anything to try to encourage people to like us or to come pay attention to us, you let me know.
You know, Rex, I think that was a veiled reference to my conversations with Andrew Cuomo. I get it.
Are you feeling guilty?
No, I get it. So wait, I'm not.
All right.
I'm not.
I'm just trying to jump
yet.
In a little bit.
I'm
go
not
ahead,
through. I'm not through here.
Good
I sit down before
hour.
I'm on with Andrew. I sit down every single time and I write down on a piece of paper every embarrassing question I could possibly come up with.
Hmm.
And still I'll get a letter from somebody saying, stop pandering to him.
So can I get back to the original point and say I agree 100% with Rex that I believe the future and the revenue model is with the readers, not with the advertisers. I think going forward, that's what we need to do. We need to worry more about, we need to worry about everything, but we need to make sure we maintain the trust of our readers, and that is what's going to drive our success going forward. We're not going to be that worried about advertisers. Our industry always has been a good venue for businesses to get the word out about their specials. People, we have relied on newspapers to see what's on sale. But going forward, those advertisers going elsewhere, maybe they'll just go on radio.
Well, because of what you're saying is even more reason for people to heed what Sue, our email writer, has said. And I hope that this gets passed on to NPR. So some of it is reality and some of it is perceived reality.
Sure.
And the people at NPR need to know that, boy, it sounds like when you are writing, not that it was a total puff piece, but it's a legitimate story because it's a new app, it's growing in popularity, you want to show that you're with it, you want to tell people, what is this new but you have to be very careful that you're not just doing stories about your advertisers.
I'm going to surprise you. I totally agree with you. I totally agree with you. And I think NPR is aware of it because there isn't a story that they do, if there is an underwriter, that they don't say so-and-so is an underwriter of National Public Radio. But okay. I have great concerns about it, and this story is a pretty good example.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you have more thoughts, media@wamc.org is how you get to us. Alan Shartok, Judy Patrick, Barbara Lombardo, and I'm Rex Smith, and we are grateful to have you with us today. So, since we were last on these airwaves, the Pulitzer Prizes have been awarded. No one in this room won a Pulitzer Prize once again.
Well, you have to now, in order to get one of those things, you have to submit your stuff, right?
Well, yes, or someone submits
it for
you.
And Rexy, as a former first in his class graduate of Columbia Journalism School, which you are, I just want to point that out.
Where I won something called the Pulitzer Fellowship, which is not quite as cool as
the
Pulitzer Prize. It's close enough. Same clause in the will of Mr. Pulitzer. That's very nice.
By the way, we interviewed this wonderful producer of the film on Joseph Pulitzer. It was very interesting.
Uh-huh.
We did an hour with him, and fascinating stuff. And I learned a lot. Mm-hmm. For example, I didn't know he was a Hungarian Jew.
I watched that. It was a very good film.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Of course, he was the great opponent, the great foe of William Randolph Hearst, who is the progenitor of my organization.
The progenitor, indeed.
Indeed.
Yeah. But my point was, you have to send something in to get it judged, right?
That's correct.
They don't reach out to you and say, well, you know, the Times did such a good job this year.
No. And I've been a Pulitzer juror, and it is for a couple of times, and you get a lot of material. There's a lot of reading. It is exhausting and thought-provoking, and you read a lot of great material that just doesn't quite make it. So if you're a Pulitzer finalist, usually the juries come up with three finalists, and then there's a Pulitzer Prize board of about 20 people that actually makes the award.
Now, the announcement of these Pulitzers in the newspapers has always fascinated me, because if somebody got an obscure Pulitzer as opposed to, you know, a major Pulitzer, you're gonna read it across the top of the page. You know, in other words, the Podunk Times receives Pulitzer.
So in an obituary, there is no such thing as an obscure Pulitzer. It's always the lead of your obituary.
I see. Yeah, that's right. And, you know, there's no question the Berkshire Eagle won a Pulitzer in
54,
right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Still Pulitzer winning newspaper.
Right. But a lot of the time, if you rise to the occasion when you have a major event that occurs in your community, if you perform your job really well, you will likely win the Pulitzer. For example, the South Florida Sun-Sentinel won the Pulitzer for breaking news reporting for their coverage of the Marjory Stoneman Douglas slaughter. And the Capital Gazette, they got a special citation. They didn't win a Pulitzer Prize, but a special citation. That was the newsroom where people were shot dead in the newsroom.
So is there political messaging by the Pulitzer? You were on the Pulitzer board, so you can tell us. Did you have to hold up your hand and swear to Omerta? Or can you tell us, you know, it's the old mafia thing about silence. So did you, because I looked at your obscure faces.
No. Yeah. We know Omerta.
So did you guys have to think about where it fits in a political setting? So, for example, if a newsroom got wiped out, they got an award, the board was really saying something about the dangers of the journalist's face.
No, you do not. For the jurors, we look only at the journalism itself. However, I think that you can say that for the South Florida Sun-Sentinel, the travail of trying to cover that is part of the process of journalism that perhaps deserves reward. You know, it's a very difficult thing to cover.
Got it, but I was thinking more of the other Gazette story.
Mm-hmm. Capital Gazette.
Capital Gazette.
I don't know. That citation would have been the Pulitzer board once again, not the jurors. And they were given a special $100,000 to further the newspaper's journalistic mission, so they don't know exactly what
they're doing. So that's another thing. This is not the Nobel Prize. I think they get $15,000.
Yeah, there's not money. It's purely prestige.
So what do you think about journalism awards? Do you think this is a good thing for the industry? Maybe it's just a bitter quality of my life that I've never came close to winning a Pulitzer, but I always thought it was important to write stories that serve the readers and not to write to win a prize.
I agree with you. And we here at WAMC have won so many awards that you can't even... No, it's true. You can't even come into the place. Every nook and cranny has an award plaque, you know, stuffed in there. But you're right. You know, there are those people who, I've seen it happen, who say, we got to win an award this year.
Well, but how nice to do both, because I think it's valuable. It's critical to be serving your readers. Public Service Award, investigative reporting, local reporting, that is your mission. And then it's gravy if you're also recognized by your peers.
The value of awards is twofold, I think. First, it encourages the high standards that prize judges are looking for. But second, it is a public statement that great journalism matters, that people ought to honor great journalism. We have just seen recently the new Press Freedom Index, which just came out, which is an annual rating that specifies how it is countries are performing in terms of press freedom. And the United States has once again slipped further down, falling three places to 48th, 48th in the world in terms of press freedom, indicating sort of a decline in journalistic independence and safety.
You know, Rex, I get a little worried, however, and I think your question was an excellent one, and Judy's response was an excellent one.
The laugh, you mean?
Yeah. You know, no. In fact, when the journalistic community gets together to honor its own, one way or the other, what does that say about the chances of people who really want to turn it on its head and do it a little bit differently? Will they be relegated to you can't win because you're not one of us?
You mean like Breitbart, that kind of turning it on its head, biased, blatant, non-straightforward journalism? Is that what it is? Or what do you mean by people who want to turn it on its head?
You know, Rex, you're better at putting words in my mouth than
anybody. Well, I'm just trying to understand what it is you're asking, because you seem to suggest that there's something
surreptitious. If, in fact, there is a journalistic community and somebody is outside of that community and doing good work, is it possible that they don't get an equal break because people are protecting themselves? We've all heard about the herding instinct, for example.
Great.
And then, of course, when a major report like the Mueller report comes out, all the reporters get together and somebody yells out, page 43, you know. So what I'm saying is, how do you avoid that?
You know, the Pulitzer Board has been more open to giving awards to papers other than the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, and the Washington Post recently. In fact, this year, there were some small local papers that did win. So that is refreshing, that they don't just go to the big guys.
Not real small. That's the thing. There are mid-sized papers that won. You know, the winner of the award for commentary was a columnist for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, rather than being a columnist for the Washington Post. And the finalists were also from mid-sized papers. And
wasn't that a Pulitzer paper?
Who?
Wasn't that originally a Pulitzer paper, the St. Louis?
Oh, St. Louis? Yeah, that was exactly. That was
you see,
Joseph
they're paying
Pulitzer's
off to
paper.
Their own.
Oh,
jeez. Oh, but I don't know, Alan, what you mean by people who stand outside. I mean, it seems to me that nowadays, especially, the Pulitzers are open not just to newspapers, but to magazines, to independent entities like ProPublica. And if you mean are people who have standards that are different from high-quality journalism, yes, I think they stand outside.
Again, words in
well,
my
so you have to, I mean, isn't one of your sayings, what if stinks? I mean, you're just saying, what if? So give me an example of what kind of person it is that you think are not getting the award from the Pulitzer Board.
Well, let me give you an example. You may reject it out of hand. But we had a guy in our area who was perceived by most people as being sort of New York Post-ish. And coming out and taking a different stance than many people in the media were. And he was largely disdained. I happen to think some of it was deserved. Not some of it, most of it was deserved. Nevertheless, that's a pretty good example of, you know, he's not one of us, so we reject his thinking.
I don't understand what you're talking about.
Really?
Really. Or whatever you're alluding to. I think the parts about the... So pardon me, I just don't understand what you're trying to say.
Yeah.
So please clarify for me.
No, I'm not going to do that. I don't have to do that.
Yeah, I think that journalism is an inclusive club. They do stretch their arms out to try to include everyone. And last year, Dave Fahrenthalt from the Washington Post won for his reporting, included the fact that he was crowdsourcing a lot of his data search, which was a new development in how journalism works. I think people may not like people personally, but they can still win awards if...
I really do
think judges try to value just the content itself and try to separate the people from the content.
A few years ago, the Post Star won a Pulitzer for the work of the editorial writer, who is now the editorial writer at your former
paper. Mark Mahoney.
Mm-hmm. So it does go sometimes to smaller papers. And it typically, actually, some years ago, 15 years ago, I did a study of Pulitzer results and found that a tiny percentage, about 15% of the awards over the years, had gone to papers of 100,000 circulation or less. So it tends to go to big papers, but that's because that's where the resources are. That's where the great investigative reporting can be done.
We've been judges in contests of various levels, and it is the norm that the papers that are of largest circulation tend to have the, not always, but tend to have the writers and editors and design people who are more tenured, more experienced, and maybe more talented than the smallest of the papers.
The Pulitzers, unlike other papers, don't have circulation categories. You know, in our, for example, our state contest, underwritten by Judy's organization and by the New York News Publishers Association and the State AP Association, those are all in circulation classes. But the Pulitzers, the whole country competes. By the way, I misspoke earlier. The Breaking News Pulitzer this past year went to the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette for its coverage of the Tree of Life synagogue killings. What the South Florida Sun Sentinel won for was coverage of the aftermath of the Marjory Stoneman Douglas shootings, the failures by police and school officials.
So it's very interesting to me that in order to be rewarded with a Pulitzer, you, to some degree, depend on the vicissitudes of things that may have happened in your area.
Right,
especially
and
tragedies.
And how you handled it. And in the Pittsburgh case, it kind of hits home to me how David Schribner, the longtime editor of that paper, who oversaw the coverage of that, left after that.
Right. David was retirement age. I mean, I don't think there was anything. He'd been doing the job for a long time. But, you know, Alan, it's not just vicissitudes. I mean, the New York Times won a Pulitzer for explanatory reporting for their tremendous investigation of Donald Trump's finances, you know, that debunked his claim that he's a self-made man.
And that does take a lot of resources.
Huge. But it does. And so as local newsrooms, the small ones get smaller and smaller, and big papers like the New York Times and the Washington Post get larger because they appear to be hiring. What's that going to mean? Are all the prizes going to go to the big papers? Is that where all the quality work is going to go? This year was refreshing because you did see that despite reduced size of newsrooms, that we're still getting quality work out there. I don't know how they do it sometimes.
So I'm sorry, Judy, but Rex, as a former participant in the process, is there an attempt, as Judy is quite correctly pointing up, is there an attempt to make sure that they don't all go to the big guys?
Yes, I think there is some of that. I was a juror for investigative reporting 1 year, and we actually had an interesting choice. We were right on the bubble about whether to include a Chicago Tribune series on doctors who kill or a Hartford Current series on nurses who kill, that is, ineptitude in the medical professions. And we went with the Hartford Current as a finalist because it's a smaller newsroom that we thought that it took greater effort to produce great journalism in a smaller newsroom than in a big one. So when you're really close, I think that in our case, that did matter. Sometimes something is just so overwhelmingly terrific that you have to reward it, even if it is big. The Wall Street Journal got an award this year for national reporting, but that was because it was the Wall Street Journal that uncovered the president's secret payoffs to two women who claimed to have had the affairs with him. You know, so when it's that strong, you can't avoid, I think, giving the Pulitzer to that kind of strong reporting. Right?
Did the president have anything to say about the Pulitzers this year? And did he issue his, remember the first year he was in office, he issued his worst journalism awards?
Yeah.
I don't know if he did that this year.
Right. And he would, of course, be wanting to give great reporting awards to Fox and Friends.
Now that raises the next question, of course, doesn't it? I mean, we now know that Fox had Bernie Sanders on. And a lot of people criticized for Bernie, A, for going on, and B, criticized Fox for having him on. And Bernie defied convention, went on, and got great kudos for having done it. Although the reporting on how he did when he was on widely varied. Some people thought he fell on his face, and some people thought he was great.
But these candidates who are standing up to questions, which I think they should, I think it's terrific of the candidates to go on everywhere they can where they get questions. And now there are a bunch of other candidates who are in negotiations with Fox to get a similar deal. Kirsten Gillibrand and Pete Buttigieg and Kamala Harris, I think some of them are really eager to do a Fox News town hall.
But your point is very well taken. You said, and now. Mm-hmm. In other words, it took somebody to break the ice.
Yeah.
A Bernie to go on and do that.
Right.
And he gets great credit, I think.
Right. People from the right were criticizing the audience as being too easy on Bernie, and then people from the left were criticizing Bernie for even considering talking to that audience.
To say nothing, Judy, of the President of the United States,
yeah, he tweeted
who
on
talked
this
about
as well.
Our Fox, our station.
It's right.
I guess the cat's out of the bag.
The executive producer of Fox News, Donald J. Trump. So here we are. So as we bring ourselves down towards the end of the program, by the way, the powers that be here at WAMC, Dr. Chartok being the leading power that is, we have an extra 4 minutes on our program now each week. So isn't
soon
that a
it'll be an hour.
I figured this was a trick to we're expanding four minutes per week.
Well, we're putting something at risk because it has been reported this past week that the attention span globally is narrowing.
What'd you say?
I said.
So nobody's listening to this right now, is that right?
Exactly. For example, in 2013, a Twitter global trend would last for an average of 17.5 hours. In 2016, it would last for only 11.9, so a drop of 6 hours. That's a drop of by about one-third in simply 3 years.
Well, that's because the President of the United States happens to be Donald Trump throwing at least a verbal grenade every day, and the most outrageous stuff is what you are paying attention to and not something that happened 2 weeks ago.
It could give you a twitch, you know? That was your sound effect of a twitch.
That's all, folks.
That's all, folks. Alan Chartok, Barbara Lombardo, Judy Patrick, and Rex Smith, we thank you for joining us this week on The Media Project.
Now newspapermen are such interesting people. When they know they've got a people's fight to wage. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper gill. Got a free new world to build. Meet the people.
The Media Project is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. Alan Chartok is CEO of WAMC, professor emeritus at the State University of New York, commentator, columnist, and author. Rex Smith is editor of the Times Union. Judy Patrick is the vice president for editorial development for the New York Press Association. And Barbara Lombardo is a journalism professor at the University at Albany and former executive editor of the Saratogian and the Troy Record. You can listen to or podcast The Media Project anytime at WAMC.org or just download the WAMC app for your iPhone or Android at the Play Store today. Thanks for listening.
Now newspapermen meet such interesting people. It must have startled poor old Sadie's Unk. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, city desk. Hold the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. Like the richest girl who could not bake a cake. Ting-a-ling, ting-a-ling, ling-a-ling-a-ling. Now, newspapermen are such interesting people. They used to work like hell just for romance.